Good evening, True Seekers. Mike Beloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Spend part of your Friday night with us. Hope you're going to spend the whole thing, but I understand. You don't have any money to go anyplace, do you? Huh? Movies suck. Dinner's too expensive. So stick around while we pry open your brain and see what's inside there. Last night, towards the end of the program, flashing across my computer terminal was... a blog by Brad Friedman, who has the site bradblog.com, and he was quoting a Lexington, Kentucky NBC affiliate who was reporting yesterday afternoon that five Clay County officials, including a circuit court judge, a county clerk, the election officer, and election officers, were arrested yesterday after they were indicted on federal charges accusing them of using corrupt tactics to obtain political power and personal gain. The NBC affiliate went on to say the 10-count indictment unsealed yesterday accused the defendants of a conspiracy from March 2002 to November 2006 that violated the RICO Act. The defendants were also indicted for extortion, mail fraud, obstruction of justice, conspiracy to injure voter rights, and conspiracy to commit voter fraud. According to the indictment, these alleged criminal actions affected the outcome of federal, local, and state primary and general elections in 2002, 2004, and 2006. Good God in heaven. Brad Friedman is on the line with us now. Hey, Brad.
Hey, Mike, how are you, sir?
This sounds halfway serious.
Yeah, well, it's real serious, and it's actually bigger than it actually appears. Of course, the mainstream media doesn't get it, but we'll try to put it into perspective here. Yeah, this was an ongoing conspiracy between some eight of these folks who were arrested,
mm-hmm.
Including a circuit judge, the head of the election board there, the school superintendent. They were all in this scheme to not just buy and sell votes over a bunch of elections, 2002, 2004, 2006,
mm-hmm.
but what caught my eye, frankly, here the most was that the fact that they were gaming electronic voting machines. They were
Let me see. Yeah. Now, who manufactured those, Brad?
Well, in this case, it was ES&S.
No!
Yes, ES&S, the largest voting machine company in America.
Uh-huh.
But what they were doing was a scheme that could be done on any touchscreen voting machine, including Diebold, Sequoia, Hardin or Civic, and all the rest, because they're all designed with the same crappy design that allows exactly this to happen.
You know, Diebold, gee, that sounds familiar. Oh, yeah, that's right. Those were the machines that I have voted on here in Georgia. I think the last four elections, counting the off years, they're also the people that can handle an ATM transaction, but they can't give me a receipt about who I voted for.
Well, that's right. Well, they don't want to. They do in some states, but frankly, it wouldn't make a difference. Because in this case, exactly, you know, what these guys were doing, it wouldn't have mattered if there was a receipt or not, because the receipt would have said exactly what it was that they were changing the votes to, changing the machines to say.
Oh,
you know, and furthermore, what this shows us, because this was election officials, Board of Elections officials, including a circuit judge, as I said, you know, we have heard time and time again how, oh, these machines, they may have security issues, but ain't no voter going to be able to get in there and change an election. Mm-hmm. And those of us who know anything about computer security and about e-voting have always argued that it's not the voters you have to worry about.
Right.
It's the insiders.
Right. So it's never voter fraud. It's always election fraud.
Well, that's right. And you couldn't have accomplished this scheme unless you had the insiders at the polls who were actually taking people into the booths, telling them once they hit the vote button, they were done with their vote. Now, these silly voters, why would they think that just because they went through the ballot and then hit a button that says vote, that they were done? Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, this is the way these things are designed. But in fact, when you hit the vote button, you're not actually done. You then get to review your ballot.
Right.
And then finally hit a cast ballot button.
That's right, yeah.
And that's how they were able to get in there. They would, you know, after they hit the vote button, they would say, okay, great, you're done, thanks a bunch, goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would stay in the booth, they would change the votes to whatever they want, and then they would hit cast ballot.
Oh, for God's sake. I mean, not only does that piss me off, but it's a very simple theft. You didn't have to be, excuse me, these are Kentucky elected officials, so I guess they wouldn't be very smart, would they?
Well, I'll tell you, I read someone's comment today, I can't remember on... It's been getting coverage. People have been linking over to this story all day. And one of the commenters said, you know, it's like with cockroaches. If you see one, there are likely hundreds of them there.
Well, I watched a couple of evening newscasts like I'm wont to do every single night, and also cruise around websites, mainstream media websites. And, Brad, for the life of me, I haven't found anything about this yet. Only on your site and to, you know, whoever who's linked to it now. But this started at your site last night. And this was on NBC, the NBC affiliate in Lexington, Kentucky. How's come media hasn't picked up on this?
Because they don't get it. They don't give a damn. You know me. I've been driving you crazy for I don't know how many years, screaming and yelling and screaming with my hair on fire about these voting machines, these voting systems. And people just, I think people care. But I can't explain why the media doesn't care. I can't even explain why more in the progressive media don't care.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
it allows these guys to get away with it. You know, I'm reading another story that came out yesterday. Now, here's the big thing, is that the voting machine industry, the private vendors who use secret software to count our elections, they have been saying for years that, well, there may be problems with our system, but there's, you know, nobody's ever actually used one of these electronic systems to hack an election in any way, to change results, et cetera. Well, now we have a very specific example of somebody having done that. Never mind, there is plenty of evidence that has been done,
right,
even though they try to hide it. But now we have specific evidence, and even the spokeswoman for the industry in this other story on something else said yesterday that, quote, no electronic voting system has been compromised in an election.
Well,
apparently she is wrong.
Is absolutely
again.
Wrong. Yeah, absolutely. How did, before we get to what this might mean for Kentucky electoral politics, tell me how these people got indicted. Now, this is a 10-count indictment, which I would think would indicate that there was some heavy-duty investigative work going on prior to taking this to a grand jury that handed up this indictment, 10-count indictment. What do you suppose tipped off the authorities? And again, this is Kentucky, so I will make the assumption, other people may not, but I will make the assumption that whatever votes were stolen, whatever machines were altered in favor of Republicans. So one would assume that the county prosecutor in Lexington, Kentucky would also be a Republican. How did this make it to a grand jury?
Well, in truth, I don't know. I've been trying to figure that out. The reporting on it has been so bad.
Well, it's puzzling to
more details.
It's
now.
Puzzling to you too, then.
What's that?
It's puzzling to you too, then.
Well, it is, but the fact that it's done, you know, they. Let me make it clear. They got away with it. I mean, they started this scheme back in 2002, and then 2004, 2006, in the primary and the general, in each of those years. So they've been getting away with it for some years. Now, part of their scheme also involved buying and selling votes, so they would pay people for their absentee ballot to vote the way they wanted them to vote. Now, this means you've got a wider and wider conspiracy.
I got it.
And the wider the conspiracy, the easier it is to catch. So I'm going to guess that somebody, you know, finally blew the whistle there. I'm trying to figure out who. But as far as Republican or Democrat, Mike, a lot of these folks who were arrested seem to be involved with the Democratic Party. Now, if they were actually Democrats, I don't know, because, in fact, it also includes a Republican judge. So you had actually Republican judges and Democratic judges at the polling place doing these things in a very, very heavily Republican county. So I don't even know, you know, it may just be that these guys were in it for the money because they were bribing candidates to get on their slate of people who they would help get elected.
When you say judges, now, are you referring to judges or poll judges or do you mean courtroom judges?
One of the guys who was arrested was, in fact, the circuit county judge there. But, no, I mean the polling place judges.
Okay,
both Republican judges and as Democratic judges.
Let me get you hold on, Brad. We gotta take a break here, so we'll come right back. We're talking with Brad Friedman. Go to bradblog.com and check this out.
Defining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. We're talking with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, who last night put the word out about a 10-count indictment unsealed yesterday in Lexington, Kentucky, Clay County, Kentucky. All sorts of accusations against a raft of defendants on crimes involving the misuse of voting equipment. I can't get it said tonight. I'm sorry. All right, now, Brad, how does this? Do you have any idea how this may or may not have affected the any of the elections in Kentucky?
No, because I haven't yet to be able to get the slate of candidates. What they would do is, in each of these elections in 2002, 2004, 2006, in the primaries and the generals, they would basically draft a slate of candidates, and they would go around from candidate to candidate and essentially bribe them to get on this group of conspirators to get on their slate, and these would be the people they would put through. That's one of the reasons why it's been so difficult to figure out if these were Democrats or Republicans. At this point, I don't know, but the county has gone heavily Republican election after election down there, despite the fact that some of these guys claim to be part of the Democratic Party, while others were Republican election judges and so forth. So don't know how it affected the race just yet, but I can also tell you that these machines that they used to go in and manually change votes on the electronic voting machines, the ESNS iVotronic, is used in 419 counties across 18 states in this nation, these exact same machines.
That's about 20%, isn't it?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, I think ESNS has a total of about 40%, if I'm remembering correctly, of the election business, and I even hate that word, but the election business in this country. So their machines are everywhere. The ability to do this is everywhere, and the particular scheme these guys pulled off doesn't even have to be on ESNS machines. It could be on machines made by Diebold, Sequoia, or anybody else.
Well, let me ask you then, is there a possibility here, are we overthinking this? Could it be that these people really didn't give a tinker's damn who got elected to what, that what they were interested in, once they figured out that they could influence directly by playing with these machines the vote, maybe they just decided to go into it for the money, that they have no political agenda at all. They don't give a damn who's elected or if nobody's elected as long as they get the money.
You know what? That's exactly the sense that I'm getting. Now, I could be wrong here, but it seems to me this was a money-making scheme because, you know, remember, it was a twofold scheme. One, they were paying absentee voters. They were going through the books and figuring out who they might be able to, you know, who they knew in that county they might be able to pay off to get their votes via absentee voting.
Uh-huh.
But then on election day, at the polling place, they didn't even need to pay anybody for their votes because they were flipping it themselves. So this means any money that they were able to have bribed from candidates who wanted to be on their slate, they could keep all of that money. So I'm sensing they were in this thing for the money more than any political reason.
Right. So what I might point up, though, if these were just cheesy crooks who figured out a way to make to steal money, what it points up, though, is how simple it is to alter an election, contrary to what these people have always said.
Exactly right. And that's the point. And that's why, to me, frankly, it doesn't even matter if they had flipped it to Democrats, flipped it to Republicans. I've been making this case for years. I don't give a damn. Either and all parties can do it. These machines make it incredibly easy, much easier for a smaller conspiracy, an insider, a single person can flip an entire election without being detected because of these electronic machines. And that's what, by the way, this week out here in California, a Diebold spokesman was finally forced to admit exactly that, that every version of their software allows votes to be deleted by an administrator, and that deletion will not even be recorded in the audit log. So if you wanted to go back and look at the election after the election, you can remove wholesale thousands of ballots, and you would have no idea when you went back to inspect that election. And, you know, you're out there in Georgia where they use these crappy Diebold touchscreens across the entire state.
Right.
It's 100% faith-based voting, and there is no amount of examination afterwards that would likely expose a completely flipped election.
Well, the bottom line in all this, and we're getting ready to bail out for this segment, Brad. The bottom line in all this is that until these machines are gone, or until this proprietary programs that are using these machines are made public at anyone's request, then we never will really know how an election is really turned out, right?
You're exactly right. We're just faith-based elections. That's all we got. And I don't, frankly, even if they make the source code available, there's still way to game,
still
ways
way,
to game
yeah.
these systems.
Still
get a piece of paper, get a pen, put them in a clear, ballot box, and count the damn ballots at the end of the night at the precinct.
Wow.
It ain't rocket science.
What a novel idea. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Brad, thank you so much, man.
Always my pleasure. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Mike Malloy Show.
Be an idiot. Act lonely. Stay ignorant. Be remedial. Wear the dust caps. Loud children drool like a hunchback. Don't discuss this. Shout the last word. Put your wrist out the pasture. Drop your IQ. That's what I do. My advice to girls and guys who want to be a Nobel Prize finalist. Rocket scientists. Try applying this. Keep the customers coming around. If you're smart, then you better start dumbing it down. Say anything too profound. Dumb it down.
To Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Yes, you are. It's about 26 before the hour. Hey, happy Ostara, which is where we get the word Easter. Ostara, Easter. Happy Ostara. Another one of those damn pagan holidays that the Church of Rome overtook, devoured, and regurgitated as something it was never intended to be. It's one of the. I'm going to focus on this just a second because it is a very important holiday. It is the spring equinox. We are halfway to the longest day of the year here in the Northern Hemisphere and halfway to the shortest day of the year here in the Northern Hemisphere, the reverse of which is true in the, you guessed it, Southern Hemisphere. It is Ostara. The word Ostara is just one of the names applied to this celebration. According to some Wiccan experts or pagan experts, the word, the origin of the word, pay attention, you should know this. The origin of the word is actually Estra, a Germanic goddess of spring, or Estra. You know the kinds of words we get from that, right? A female creature that is in estrus is one that is, what is it, ovulating, Kathy? Or whatever. See how this all ties together? Spring, rebirth, the risen Christ. Huh? You see? flowers, bunnies, jelly beans. There you go. There you go. It's also the same time as the Jewish Passover that takes place around this time of year. It says here, for early pagans in the Germanic countries, this was the time to celebrate planting and the new crop season. Typically, the Celtic people did not celebrate Ostara as a holiday, although they were in tune with the changing of the seasons. Persian kings celebrated this holiday. The ancient Romans, of course, the indigenous Mayan people in Central America, on and on and on. And I think this is one of the interesting things that has always intrigued me about religious ritual. Is any religion that claims to have a claims ownership on any one of these holidays, I think is further proof of its invalidity. I don't care what the religion is. These holidays, these ancient astrological events that folks long before their the complete understanding or any understanding of the relationship between the stars and the planets or our star and our planets, long before that relationship was understood or even comprehended, it was very clear to the wise people in the tribes, in the villages, in the societies. You know, the wise people, the ones that got to eat the magic herbs and things that grew in the ground and have the visions and come up with the answers, those people understood the clear swinging, if you will, to and fro of the planets. Title like la di da di da di da. Back and forth we go. La di. And they understood that, and they understood that everything is in balance, believe it or not, in our little corner of the universe. And if you want to extrapolate from that, gee, things must be in balance all over the place, except when we decide to get everything out of balance. So there's our little nod to Ostara, Ostra, Easter. Got it? Did you see this Joe the Plumber thing where he was at another one of these meetings of people who hate America, hate our political system, hate themselves, hate their parents, and the way they get the way they deal with all this is externalize it and turn it into or internalize it and turn it they chart their stars, but they come up with this idea: we're conservatives, we hate anything that tries to interconnect all humans, because that would be astrology maybe. We don't want that. We don't like that. We don't like helping people. God damn it, either survive or don't survive. But you know, we are not chimpanzees. We don't live in a pride. No, I guess that would be lions. Well, whatever. We're not that. We're humans. We're here for one reason: make money. Well, Joe the Plumber shows up at one of these conventions, and whose real name, by the way, is Samuel Wurzelbacher. I'm sick of calling him Joe the Plumber. I really am. There's no reason to call Republicans anymore. They're limbots. So anyway, of course, when I refer to Piyush Jindal, everybody pees their pants on the Republican right. Why are you calling him Piyush? His name is Bobby. No, it's not. It's Piyush. Just like Barack's name is not Barry. It's Barack. But anyway, I digress. Samuel Wurzelbacher told a crowd of conservatives last night that their love in the room, all the love, all the hand-holding, all the touching, was getting him hot and bothered. He was introduced to the song, what did I say on television? I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm for that song. And he walked up on the stage and he made a few comments, and then he turned to the crowd and he said, God, all this love and everything in this room, I'm horny. I'm sure there was a stampede of women heading for the exits when he said that. Have you ever seen this guy? Oh, sure you have. You've seen Wurzelbacher. He was on the stage, and he went up to a standing ovation. This guy has really contributed a lot to American conservatism, hasn't he? He really has. Great thinker, a great strategist, has really added all sorts of insights and developmental thises and thats to the conservative movement, the conservative ideology. He's a great student. He went all the way back to ancient times. He's a jackass. He's a halfwit. Couldn't find his ass with both hands. Doesn't even know what his name is. Doesn't even know what his profession is. I'm Joe the Plumber. No, you're not. You're Joe the Jackass. Only that's not really your name. You're Wurzelbacher the Jackass. But he was there at the annual, the Media Research Center's annual Dishonors Award. Immediately after saying that, there was a lot of buzz when he said he was horny. God, all the love and everything in this room, I'm horny. Excuse me. Hits my gag reflex right in the center spot. Did Joe the Plumber really just say he's horny? Did you hear Joe say horny? Why is he horny? Why is he telling us? After declaring he was horny, Joe mumbled a few other things about being a token redneck. And how the media loves him. And then he sat back down in a sea of conservative luminaries that included G. Gordon Liddy, a murderer, Ed Meese, another one, radio talk show host Mark Levin, who I'd never heard of, Fox News' Brit Hume, a jackass and former House Speaker for half a minute, Bob Livingston, another serial adulterer who rose to power in Washington. You remember Bob Livingston? You don't remember Bob Livingston. Oh, my God, Bob Livingston. From Louisiana, he was going to be the Speaker of the House who's our guy here? Contract on America, Newt Gingrich. When Newt got caught one too many times dipping his wick in the wrong candle holder, all of a sudden, boom, he resigned and Bob Livingston took over. And, of course, Bob Livingston, how long was he a Speaker of the House? 2 days. And all the whores, no offense to sex workers, started coming out of the woodwork saying, "Hey, Bob, hot damn, you finally made it." And, you know, he trotted out his wife and, I'm afraid that the Speaker's job of the House would be a little bit distracting. Oh, no, that's not what I really mean. Continuing to be an adulterer would be, never mind, I'm not going to take the job anyway. So all these luminaries were there, and Wurzelbacher gets up and he says, "I'm horny." Oh, my God. Oh, I also had a couple of comments for Michael Steele, the uncle who is now the chairman of the Republican National Committee. Michael Steele, who really probably, if we got to know him, his ideas are extremely politically moderate and almost on the Democratic side. But when he tried to state his case, Michael Steele and Rush Limbaugh took out the massive whip and went, bam, and caught poor old Michael Steele on his punkin' head. Michael immediately got down on his knees before the huge, obese Rush Limbaugh and begged forgiveness. "I'm sorry, Master. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it." Well, Joe the Plumber said about Michael Steele, unfortunately, we have a chairman up there who wants to redefine conservatism. He wants to make it hip-hop, put it in a new package and sell it. You can't sell principles. Either you have them or you don't. So saith Samuel Wurzelbacher. Oh, my God. All of these convocations of these right-wingers, Republicans, conservatives, Limbots, whatever you want to call them, it really is a freak show, isn't it? And as Keith Olbermann pointed out tonight, the guy who used to be on NBC News, and it became apparent that he just didn't belong on NBC News. They moved him over to Fox News, Britt Hume. When Britt Hume came time to give his speech, he thanked the organization Media Research Center, which is an extreme right-wing organization, for providing him, Britt Hume, with all the facts necessary to present the showcase Fox News program that Britt Hume hosted for so many years, which was an open admission, and it's astonishing, an open admission that Britt Hume was not reporting the news. He was reporting what the Media Research Center, run by the guy who said, we want to reduce the welfare state until it's we can drown it in a bathtub. Remember that guy? Welfare state. Now, of course, what he meant by that was not welfare for corporations, but welfare for individuals, real people who really need it. But there's Britt Hume at this event the other night talking about how much he appreciates the right-wing drivel that was handed to him that he presented as news on Fox News. I don't know how anybody who has been on a steady intake of the Fox News channel can have any working knowledge of what's going on in the country, in the world. It's unbelievable. It worries me in a sense that I have to share a culture of society with people who are so grossly misinformed. If you combine the lies, the deception, the misinformation and disinformation that you hear on right-wing talk radio with the closely coordinated lies, deceptions, misinformation you hear on Fox News Channel, anything that Fox touches, anything that Rupert Murdoch touches, all the way up to and including this little worm, Matt Drudge, who is nothing more than a shill to begin with. He's a little gossip monger, but because he gets 37 trillion hits a day on his website, everybody thinks that what he talks about is valid. What he talks about is not valid, absolutely not valid. He is to the news business what a lamprey is to a shark. He attaches itself, and he's a sucker. He sucks from legitimate news sources or from the gossip vine. He's like a lamprey. But anyway, when you combine Drudge, right-wing talk radio, and Fox News, roll them all together and come up with something that smells very, very badly. But if you put it out there for consumption and people actually start listening, reading, or watching this garbage, eventually they get to the point where it's impossible, whether they know it or not, to make an informed decision about anything. It can't be done. If I control your environment and pour into your head that this chair over here in the corner is actually God and you must worship the chair God or your legs will fall off, and if I do that to you repeatedly, unendingly, and then reinforce it with scary comments that sitting over there is a couch, and that's the couch devil, and if you don't worship the chair of God, the couch devil will just fold itself around you and smother you. Eventually, you go mad! That was a little bit too deep for your average right-winger to understand, but you get what I'm saying, right? I used to worry for my country. I don't anymore. Do we have time to play Condi Rice? No, we don't? Okay. Condoleezza Rice, the shoe lady. Remember her? Notice how quickly she's evaporated. Huh? Just gone. I don't know what the hell she did. A national security advisor, she allowed the country to be attacked, devastated, national That means the nation. Security means safety. Advisor means she tells someone, there's bad stuff coming, or there's no bad stuff coming. As national security advisor, why is anyone talking to this woman? She allowed the country to be hit by 19 people, 15 of whom were from Saudi Arabia, and the resulting hit was 3,000 dead people in Manhattan, in a field in Pennsylvania, and at the Pentagon. And she is talked to by Charlie Rose of PBS. Why would anyone want to talk to Condoleezza Rice about anything except maybe how long she's going to be in prison? Anyway, she was on Charlie Rose's program yesterday, 6 years after the eve of destruction that we leveled onto Iraq for absolutely no reason, except because Iraq was this hotbed of terrorism, and you know Saddam Hussein was directly involved in 9/11. Every single soldier that I've ever heard interviewed on television or in a newspaper article has said, yeah, well, we were over there to get revenge for what occurred in New York on 9/11. That's why we went to Iraq. Well, Condoleezza Rice had something very interesting to say on Charlie Rose's program yesterday. We'll share it with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is almost 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Thank you for sticking around, or if you're just joining us, Jesus, we had Obama on the first hour. You missed that, didn't you? See? The guy whose name I couldn't think of, thanks to this Media Research Council people who provide right-wing media with all the lies and deceptions that they need to screw up America for yet another day. His name is Grover Norquist. I can never remember his name because I just, you know, to me, Grover is a character on Sesame Street. Always has been. All the kids I've ever had, well, not all of them because I've got some to go back before Sesame Street was around. but most, don't I, Kathy? I think I do. Well, maybe not. I don't know. The Children's Playhouse Workshop.
No, you do. Children's Television Workshop.
Is that what it was?
You, yeah, Sesame Street's a little bit older than I am. No, actually, I'm a little bit older than Sesame Street. And
oh, okay.
You have a couple of kids that...
Or older than you are.
Exactly.
Right, that's right.
You like to have them in every decade.
That's what? Wives or children?
Both.
Well... Oh, God, it's going to be a great weekend here at the Malloy household. Anyway, Grover Norquist, and the only creature named Grover in my experience is this freakish puppet. And the whole Sesame Street thing, I don't know why children like that. It scared the hell out of me the first time I saw it. It still scares me. So Grover, to me, is a Muppet. And that's why I cannot remember Grover Norquist. I mean, what a guy, right? Here's a guy who is bound and determined to destroy the country that has suckled him the way a mother nurses her baby. And Grover Norquist just doesn't give a goddamn one way or the other. Just, hey, this is sport. I love doing this. Jesus, I love tearing things up and breaking things and ruining stuff and watching people go insane with the kind of garbage that I assist in getting out there. Hey, have you read Drudge today? Hey, listen to Rush today at noon. Hey, don't forget Brit Hume. Hey, don't forget to watch, what's his name over there on Fox News Sunday. Chris Wallace. Condi Rice, the shoe lady, the national security advisor, when this country was laid low. Worst attack on American soil since the War of 1812. Where was Condi? Well, during the Katrina thing, she went to see Spamalot. But, of course, that was a domestic problem, and Condoleezza Rice, at the time of the Katrina tragedy, was United States Secretary of State. So seeing Spamalot would be what the U.S. Secretary of State. And they talk about Obama going on Leno's program last night. Oh, my God. On PBS's Charlie Rose yesterday, 6 years after the Iraq invasion and occupation, the shoe lady discussed the decision to invade Iraq. Rice said she has had no second thoughts about striking the country and having thousands upon thousands of people murdered. And then when pressed by Charlie Rose on whether Saddam Hussein had connections to 9/11, Rice blankly said that no one believed in that kind of a link. Really?
Have you had any moment since about that critical act of this administration that maybe you should have thought it through longer? Maybe we should have stayed for a while, let the whatever might work out. Maybe we should have stayed in Afghanistan and not been diverted. Have you had second thoughts about the act of going in?
Not about the act of liberating Iraq. I firmly, first of all, we did think about it long and hard. Secondly, we thought...
And everybody waited in.
Yeah.
Colin Powell waited in at all the time he needed, all the opportunities.
Right. And
Rumsfeld, everybody that had a point of view was asked, solicited.
Right. And we thought it was time to take care of Saddam Hussein.
Did anybody stand up and say, in the councils that you listen to, don't do this? If we do this, we're going to end up mired down and some of the reality that happened. Did anybody in the high councils of government say that?
No, because the question was, what do you do about Saddam Hussein? We believed that the weapons of mass destruction threat was growing because that he'd reconstituted his...
But you didn't believe it had anything to do with 9/11?
No. No one was arguing that Saddam Hussein somehow had something to do with 9/11. I was certainly not.
You were the one who was at the center, being the access to the president's mind.
That's right. We were not arguing that.
Well. So then, biatch, why did we go in? It was time to take care of Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. And those were what? A huge pile of rocks behind one of his palaces? A filthy water supply because he was too Republican-like to fix up his own country? What the? So hundreds of thousands of people have been burned alive. Burned, murdered, shot, killed, bombed into a million pieces, men, women, and children, because Condoleezza Rice and her associates in the Bush crime family decided they should be. And what was the reason? That's the one thing, Charlie Rose, I didn't quite hear it there. Well, why did we attack why did we attack Ms. Shoe Lady?
Well, because his weapons of mass destruction, we were absolutely convinced that they were reconstituting nuclear weapons.
Condoleezza Rice is confusing the propaganda that was put together inside the Bush crime family with what was eventually told to the American public with a straight face. Somebody should sit Condoleezza Rice down and ask her a few questions, and when she does this, then lay her down on a board with her head just a couple inches lower than her feet and introduce her to enhanced interrogation. It requires a cloth, a blindfold, and a nice big old pitcher of water, but we'll make sure it's Perrier. And see how long Miss Rice can maintain her story. Wouldn't that be fun? I mean, after all, it was Condoleezza Rice, one of the people inside the White House in the councils of war, who decided that these people had to be tortured. Don't use the T word. Enhancedly interrogated. We don't use the T word. That way the dumbass can go out and reassure the American people. We don't torture. We don't torture. We don't torture. Red rum. Red rum. We don't torture. Because Uncle Dick says we don't. This was our government. This was the Secretary of State. Condoleezza Rice is going to hop on one of those first-class jet excursions to someplace in the South Pacific and is going to make a mistake of extending her trip to a country that wants her ass. Not because she has done so much good work for the rest of the planet, but because she is a war criminal. And they're going to want to put her on trial. Can you imagine if all of a sudden things could flip-flop back through the Wayback Machine and we're back at Nuremberg? I keep referring to Nuremberg because we could also refer to Tokyo Bay, I guess. And all these people were on trial. Can you imagine the defense that they would offer? People like Condoleezza Rice. She said in this one, I wasn't arguing that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11. The president wasn't. I have no idea where the idea came from. Do you like my slingbacks?
And Colin Powell, like a blonde that's stacked, and Rumsfeld wants his fanny smack. Cheney, he gets quite a thrill if when you pop his cork, you shout, oil spill! We need more sex in the White House. More sex in the White House. More sex in the White House. Let's keep them on their knees.
Border to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
21 past the hour, as you know by now, because it's just been beaten to death and on so-called mainstream media. But the right-wing half-asses who are so prominent in the society are also just flogging it with no mercy. And that was Barack Obama's remark last night about the Special Olympics on the Leno program, where he said he was referring to his bowling, and he said, yeah, you know, when I bowl, it's like the Special Olympics, which I'd fail to see the insult there. I fully understand what the reference was, that people who run the 100-yard dash or the 50-yard dash in the Special Olympics do it in a way that is indicative that they have some physical limitations, right? People in the Special Olympics who swim the 50-yard freestyle do it in a way that is clearly indicative that they have some physical limitations, right? So Barack Obama saying, yeah, I bowl, you know, it looks like Special Olympics. I don't quite see the insult there, and I'm acutely attuned to those sorts of insults because I am a white male, which means I'm a racist by definition in this society. I've heard every ethnic and racial slur, kind of a joke, in my lifetime that you can possibly imagine. You know, I'm finely tuned to it, and I didn't hear it in that. I just simply didn't hear it. As a matter of fact, I use racial slurs and ethnic downbeats on this program. And I just didn't hear it in what Barack Obama said.
I certainly hope the pig man, Rush Limbaugh, didn't have anything to say about that after the way Fat Boy flopped and flapped his arms around mocking Michael J. Fox's Parkinson's disease. He wouldn't have the temerity to shame him, would he?
Well, of course. Well, yeah, sure. You know, mocking other people is one of the trademark aspects of being a Limbaugh, being a Republican in this country. It just simply is. Well, Dee in Dallas wrote in regarding President Obama's remarks about the Special Olympics on Leno, isn't it funny how when critical comments are made about a particular person or group, that person or group immediately accepts the apology and moves on, in reference to Special Olympics. But the advantage seekers are the ones who try to hang on to make sure to make more of the issue than it actually is. The head of the Special Olympics has already gone on television several times to announce that they have not only accepted President Obama's personal apology, but they have even accepted his invitation to come visit the White House. Some of the kids from Special Olympics have even challenged him to a good-natured game of bowling when they visit. Everyone, without some kind of an agenda to pursue, knows that what President Obama meant no harm in his comments. Yes, the man is president, but he is also only human, and we all make mistakes. The goal is to learn from them, which I believe he has, but it's always the ones least affected by an event that are the most outraged and want to make a novel out of a short story. If this is the worst mistake that he makes in the next 3 years, then I would consider him an utter success. The people most affected by Barack Obama's comments have accepted his apology and moved on. The rest of us should follow suit. D in Dallas.
It's not like he bombed the wrong country or something.
Yeah, God forbid. You
or,
know.
You know, forgot to read a daily brief that said, you know, Obama determined to strike within the U.S. I mean, Osama. Sorry.
Osama bin Laden. Or bin Laden.
Been forgotten.
Right. Well, D makes a very good point about this sort of thing. Somebody makes a comment like that, and again, even if I don't know what was going on in Barack Obama's mind, nor does anyone else. Of course, the Limbaughs, being all-seeing and all-knowing and able to mock people with Parkinson's, they would know what what Obama really meant. They would definitely know what he really meant. So, hence the criticism. But again, I guess it's because I am not sensitive enough. I just, when I heard the comment replayed endlessly today, I couldn't find where there was an insult or an intended slur. I just couldn't. Now, I know the right-wingers are probably running all over the country today and saying, well, suppose somebody used the N-word, thinking that, and thinking rightly, that that will connect with white racists who will go, yeah, goddamn right, if I said an N-word, they'd be all over me, and then get up there and mock crippled people. You know how this works, don't you? Huh? Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Sometimes I can't see you. All I have is words. But you finally see my voice.
yet tonight how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Just a couple of comments here regarding Obama's statement, because you folks have emailed him in, and I want to put them out there, and then, of course, we'll move on. Jim writes, regarding the Special Olympics, no, Mike, in the Special Olympics, no one loses. Everyone gets a medal, and everyone gets a hug. In the Special Olympics, it's not about winning, because the participants aren't qualified to compete to win, and neither is Obama in bowling. All right, which would justify, in a very simple way, a very simple throwaway comment. Cat Mary in Memphis writes, Obama made the Special Olympics remark without thinking. He meant no harm. But my friend, who's disabled, he has scoliosis and is in a wheelchair, said that that was the point. Obama didn't think about it. And I wouldn't have either, despite knowing my friend for over 20 years. It's part of our culture, as it were, and we do need to think more about the expressions we drink in with our cultural milk. But Obama's remark was directed at himself, and he called up an Olympics official later and apologized. I admire him for that. Can you imagine Chuckle Nuts or Darth Cheney doing something like that? Me neither. And Sean writes, Mike, I think this is an opportunity for Obama to do what we have yet to see, and some, like Politico, have even expressed disappointment for not saying. We have our momentously black president, but he has yet, as president, to address the issue of race and the larger issues of institutional bias toward disenfranchised minorities. He should use this occasion to remark that despite being the leader of the free world, he apparently still has some subconscious biases. And he should challenge Americans in their way of thinking to come out as the racist, sexist, and classist that we are. AIG exposed the outrage of the oppressed classes, and the Obama bookends that, and the Obama bookends that crisis, I don't quite get that, Sean. I'll read it the way you wrote it. And the Obama bookends that crisis with willful ignorance toward one of our most valuable classes. I guess I get it. He should take, referring to Obama, he should take this opportunity not just to apologize, but to invite us as Americans to overcome Eric Holder's assessment that we are a nation of cowards by having a frank discussion about power and oppression in our society and the world at large. We're so often a morally superior society, condemning Chinese and Middle Eastern practices as barbarism, yet we live in a society that is, to some outsiders, even some keen inside observers, equally barbaric. Right, but thanks, Sean. This is my take on what has come to be known, and it's a wrong way to put it. Political correctness. It's not that. Some right wing nutball or left wing nutball came up with that. And I just try not to use the term because it kind of sticks in my throat like a chicken bone. You know what I'm saying? But here's my take on that. We did not grow up in a culture of mutual respect. To the contrary, because this is a capitalist society, we grew up in a culture of clawing and biting each other as we climb to the top of the heap, or think we're climbing to the top of some heap. And as a result of, and I really do believe this is not a screed against capitalism. I think capitalism sucks. It destroys everything it comes in contact with. But it also has destroyed mutual respect. Capitalism doesn't say, come on, let's, Rodney King's famous statement that everybody laughed at, why can't we all get along? Capitalism insists that we don't get along. God damn it, if we all get along, where would be the incentive to, excel, right? I mean, that's what sports are about. That's what capitalism is about. Screw getting along. Beat the living Christ out of your nearest competitor and move forward. That's what this is all about. So that's the society that produced me and you and Sean and Cat Mary and all of us. Unless you just immigrated to this country a week ago. And if you did, you have your own problems back in your home country. But the United States of America is always, who's on first? It's always been that way. It always. There'd be little nursery rhymes made up about it. You know, come on. I don't have to get into that. Does that make any difference what your race is, your ethnic group, your religion, your non-religion, especially us atheists? Thank God I'm white and not gay. Can you imagine an atheist talk show host who was not white and was gay? But anyway, my take on this sort of thing is not politically correct, that term that I hate to use, like everybody else. I listen to or chuckle about or open the emails and have these jokes, and if I hear a good one, I will pass it on to my best friend. And I just simply don't beat myself over the head about it, because I just think to myself, Malloy, you know, you're never going to be those things that you think you should be, or that morality and ethical behavior tells you you should be, unless I retreat someplace, which I'm not going to do, and live a life in meditative contemplation. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to leave the world, although that might be a good thing. You know, if enough people transcendentally meditated, I mean, I'm talking about, a billion of us, probably all the Earth's problems would end in a very quick time. But I'm not going to do it. The other 900 million are not going to do it. I'm stuck where I am. I'm on this planet for a very short time. I'm never going to be perfect. I'm not even going to approach being perfect or being politically correct. So I'm kind of stuck with it. You know what I'm saying? I guess if I would have been brought up a different way or lived in a society that was not capitalist, that was not racist, sexist, classist, all these is. You know, I might have been able to blend into that society, but that's not where I came from. So I just claim it. You know, I say, of course I'm a racist. Are you kidding me? You know, I'm a white American male of a certain age. You think I'm not a racist? Please. But the difference is, I think, between a full-blown snorting racist and someone like me is I, and probably you, if you really believe in justice, you try to overcome it. I try to overcome it every day. I try to catch myself when someone cuts me off in traffic, and it's an African American. I have to stop myself from saying, "You goddamn it!" You know, the N-word. Right? I don't say that about white people. I never say, "You goddamn Caucasian!" You know, I don't do that. I just say, "Ah, watch out!" But you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. Come on, come on, come on, come on. White people just can't deal with that. So maybe that's the reason I didn't see Barack Obama's comment as being insidious or evil or mean or disrespectful or hateful or dumping on you know, yet one more group that makes up the tapestry of this society, this culture. I just don't see it that way. And can't see it that way. So. I'll tell you what. We have a break coming up pretty soon here. As a matter of fact, in a couple of minutes. And I've got a whole stack of things here that we just absolutely have to get to. But it is Friday night, so I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to open up the phones and hear from you. The number here is 877-99-MALLOY. Hasn't changed. You did pay the phone bill? Phone bill got paid.
Hasn't come yet.
Oh, it hasn't come yet.
Ask me next month.
Okay. Either the phone bill was paid or didn't come yet. Okay, well, I was kind of hoping. 877-99-MALLOY, or if you do it the other way, it's 877-996-2556. So jump in here and join us. We have got some comments from Paul Krugman that I'd like to get to tonight. But and the the 90%, or is it 90% tax that the Congress decided to levy against the bonus recipients at AIG. As I think I mentioned yesterday, it's something like that. Not only is it not a good idea to do that, because who's next? But it's also my understanding is unconstitutional. You can't do that. You can't to use the tax code to punish somebody. Isn't that what liberals have been screaming about because of Nixon and J. Edgar Hoover and all these filthy Republican administrations? Haven't Democrats and liberals just screamed about using the IRS to punish people or to go after people? Jesus Christ! Sometimes I just want to do what you want to do sometimes, throw my hands up in the air and run screaming into the woods.
To listen to Right Wing Radio, here's Mike Malloy.
It's about 9 before the hour. I love to listen to Jennifer Warnes do all that Leonard Cohen music, don't you? All right, where are we? Sal is calling from Jersey City, New Jersey, listening on Sirius. Hey, Sal.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Very good, very good. I wanted to make a comment primarily about the individuals who received the bonuses with AIG. My opinion being that they should be exposed only because most state workers, in fact, all state workers, county workers, and municipality workers, public servants, teachers. All you have to do is go online, and you can find any one of us just by putting our name into a search engine, and you can see exactly what I make for a year. You can see my overtime rate. If my mother actually worked for a municipality, and you could go online and see what her pension is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only because we receive our compensation from tax dollars.
Right.
So if they're receiving their bonuses from tax dollars, they should also be in the same bubble as us.
Yeah, I certainly don't agree with it from that standpoint. The only thing that the only thing that really bothered me about revealing who these recipients are is the fact that there is so much rage in the country right now because of this. I don't think people get enraged about public employees to the point where they, charter a bus and come over to your house and point at you while the bus driver says, "See? That's how they live. Look at that."
I agree that there is without question a level of frustration on the part of the American public, but they're also part of the same public, and they, I think, have a duty to pretty much either see it the way the majority of the rest of us see it, give the money back, or, be exposed.
Well,
if you give the money back, then you didn't receive that. I'll tell you what, let me take it a step further.
Okay.
They're now getting their salaries.
Yeah.
From the tax dollars. So maybe we all should be put in that same category, and they should be, we should be able to go online and put, names into that search engine and see what they're making per year.
Yeah,
tax
you know.
That is compensating them, just like they compensate me and you know, my fellow police officers and teachers. And,
right. Well, that's something, you know, you're hitting on something. It's the last area that people don't talk about. It used to be you don't talk about sex or religion or politics. Then it was, well, you don't talk about religion or sex. And then it was, well, you don't talk about sex. Now, every time you turn on the television, you see these commercials for these guys that have erectile dysfunction, which I think is hog snot. We couldn't be at that point. It's just guys who don't want to mess around and get all serious about that. You know, they don't want to do any foreplay. Just give me a pill! The last area now where we just don't talk to, think about it, you don't talk to your friends and say, oh, guess what I make? Or if you get your kitchen remodeled, you don't say to your friends, well, I got this done for X thousands of dollars, unless you're some kind of a nutcase. But, I have no problem with it, Sal. I have no problem with, somebody asked me once, or maybe
it's not like you're going to go on a website and put in, let's say, AIG,
right.
You know, whatever unit or department they're assigned to, and all of those names are going to come up. You know, the search engine, just like for the rest of us, you would have to put in a specific name with, I guess a specific unit that person would be in.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you're just going to go on and get in alphabetical order all of those units of the whole corporation. But the bottom line is, if I wanted to go and see what John Smith is making, because I'm curious, you know, he got a big bonus, I'd like to see how much of, you know, our tax dollars went into John Smith's office.
Well, I agree with you where you're talking about the public money going for any job that takes public money. Yeah, you're right. Let me leave it there. Thanks, Sal. I appreciate it. Any job that takes public money. Yeah. Okay. I might not have chosen that as the right way to go because I think people are entitled to privacy. But what the hell is private anymore? I'm serious. Come on. You can go to Google Earth and take a look at your, somebody's house that lives halfway across the country. So it's a touchy issue. You know, how much should be made public? But I agree with you, Sal. If I'm going to pay for it, if I'm going to put money in the kitty, then, I want to know how much is going to go if it's public money, if I'm not getting anything back from it. Now, you know, that has limits, right? I guess if you have a nonprofit organization that relies on donations, yeah, they publish a list of what their officers get. I was shocked here in Georgia to find out that the head of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, who's not a musician, but she runs the orchestra. She handles this and that, delegates a lot of authority. She makes almost $500,000 a year. Well, I also have a friend who was a flute player an oboe player in the Atlanta Symphony until she developed such serious back trouble from sitting that she couldn't do it anymore. And her pay at the peak of her career was about $80,000. So, you know, six times that went to somebody who never picked up, wouldn't know a timpani from an oboe if their life depended on it. So, I don't know. I don't know, Sal. I don't know anymore. I don't know anything. But I hear you loud and clear. We'll be back after the break. All right, welcome back. It is about 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Thanks for hanging out. Let's go back to phone calls. Rob is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTOK. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm right. How you doing?
I'm doing good. You know, I just wanted to call in and kind of give you some props because I really enjoy listening to your show.
Thanks.
And I really respect a lot of what you have to say. I mean, you really come across as a real straightforward guy and really putting the issues out there, you know, on the table, not only for Republicans, but Democrats as well. And I just want to, you know, call in and tell you, I really do appreciate that. And I really do appreciate your opinion and how you really try to be fair-minded.
Well, that's
a lot of your observations.
Well, that's
and I just want to say briefly about the president's gaffe last night. I mean, pretty much it was directed to itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it really wasn't. I mean, what he said wasn't, to me, it didn't seem like it was directly directed at the Special Olympics, but more or less of a direction of his own bowling skills that he have. And personally, you know, I think our president is probably going to be one of the most watched presidents of all times, and excuse the expression, if he farted,
you know,
that would probably even get out there in the media.
But, oh, sure. Oh, yeah. You're right about that.
Your show. I enjoy listening to you every night, man.
Well, thanks a lot, Rob. I appreciate it. Okay.
All right.
All right, sir. Take care. Yeah, Obama is going to be the most watched president in the history of the country. As Rob pointed out, everything he says, the things he doesn't say, all of it is going to be very closely, very deliberately watched. Regarding that, it's from David. Mike, I'm a disabled listener from Southern California, listening on Sirius, and my comment is this. I'm 43 and have worked as a social worker back in the 90s. Now, the way my personal health is going, having a seizure condition and cerebral palsy, I have to depend or rely on staff for much of my so-called care. Most of them are in college, early 20s, not to mention my 73-year-old mother having to be here at times. Regarding Obama's comment last night, I was very insulted by his lack of sensitivity and understanding toward us. Mind you, I voted for him in the election, but now do regret it by this incident. I feel having my disability does make others in the community place a certain stigma upon us. I have experienced this throughout my own personal life and definitely when I was working as a counselor. In ending, it's my hope that this incident would force Mr. Obama to speak with a little more thought and care. David. Okay. I certainly can intellectually relate to that point of view. I can't relate to it emotionally, which is how people who are dealing with a physical challenge would relate to it. But I hear you. Oh, my God. Guess who's here? It's Paula.
Hey, Mike.
Paula from New Jersey. Hey, Paula.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right. Can you hear me okay?
You're a little... You're a little faint, but I can hear you.
A little faint. Hold on. Let me check with my engineer here for just a second and find out. Kathy, Paula says we're a little bit faint here on her end. Can you up the gain or whatever it's called? So, Paula, can you hear me better now?
Oh, that's wonderful.
Okay, good.
That's perfect. First of all, I wanted the hold music.
Yeah.
Soundtrack from Hedwig and the Angry.
I was waiting to see if anybody would be able to would know. I thought I'd get some emails. That was a great movie, wasn't it?
Oh, I love that.
Oh, my God.
Little Town is like my favorite song.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, is it Wicked Little Town?
That, yeah. Yeah. I love the soundtrack. And I love the film. It was great. And we saw a live production of it here in Atlanta. One of the theater groups here in Atlanta did it, as a theater presentation, which is what it was when it started out. We're in London or wherever. And it was great. I love it. I love the soundtrack. But
the funny thing how his mom moved from West Germany to East Germany. I just love that.
Right.
But what I wanted to say, I missed the very beginning of the show, so I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about tonight.
We're kind of all over the map. The very beginning of the program, we were talking about the revelations in Kentucky that a bunch of county officials there and a judge were screwing with the voting machines.
Oh, that's, well...
That's not a news flash, is it?
You know, it's funny, I'm on discussion boards and stuff, and whenever anybody, you know, when I see KY
mm-hmm.
in regards to Kentucky, I just think KY.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay.
You know, like, okay. I think that's...
Okay! Thank you, Paula!
But one thing that's been, like, biting my ass since this whole... The AIG bonus thing.
Right.
That's been bugging me.
Yes.
And it's not the bonuses per se, because the corporate world sucks.
Yeah.
I worked for a company for a while before I had my Lester Burnham moment,
where
the CEO, the guy who was the CEO while I worked there, eventually was caught downloading kitty porn.
Oh, God.
On his company laptop.
Yeah.
He was allowed to resign.
Yeah.
And the company had to pay him, like, millions of dollars.
Sure.
To buy out his contract.
Right.
So I know how that works.
Mm-hmm.
But what bothers me is the people who orchestrated, who came up with this whole bailout, let's give them money, mm-hmm. didn't see that coming.
Yeah, that bothers me, too. The other thing that bothers me about it is the attitude. The attitude on these corporations who... I have to think deliberately set this up knowing that they were, quote, too big to fail, and that you and I and the other 300 million of us would be forced into this mess. So it's attitude, too. But yeah, you would think the people are going to write the checks. That was Bernanke, I think.
Why does he still have a job?
Why
is he still the chairman of the Fed?
Why? Who's to fire him?
Can't Barack Obama fire him?
No. Barack Obama.
Get some kind of, you know.
No, the Federal
Reserve. Accountant? Guy with, like, those eye shades?
I think the
Federal. And a little paper, like, adding machine? Like.
I know.
I can barely add two and two together, but.
You
I'm not that bright, but I think I could do a better job.
And you know a skunk when you smell one, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. I know. Look, you're doing something here. That I do. You're trying to use logic and reason to try to understand how we got to this, and greed and mismanagement doesn't fit into logic and reason. It never has, any more than it fits into ethical behavior or morality. So we're stuck with this. I mean, we're stuck with the AIG. We're stuck with the meltdown. We're stuck with the horror that is coming as sure as spring follows winter. I mean, what we're going to have to face, Paula, in the next couple of years, I wouldn't even presume to understand the enormity of it, but everything I read keeps telling me, hold on to your ass, because the tidal wave of financial collapse is coming. I don't like to get on this program every night and talk about it. But I just am gritting my teeth and I'm thinking, you know, like so many of us, I've got kids, I've got grandchildren. What in the hell is going to happen? I don't know, man.
Do you ever get the feeling that it's all like the outrage that everything is just theater, that everybody is playing their assigned role?
Well,
nothing is actually ever done by accident, that it's like, okay, well, you're going to, you know, come out and you're going to be outraged against this, and you're going to say, well, we can't do this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That it doesn't matter party affiliation.
Yeah.
Or that it's just some kind of grand theater that's put in place to entertain us or to keep us distracted or something. Like,
that certainly is a possibility. But then I think if that's the case, then show me the exit. Here, you can have my bag of popcorn. I'm out of here. You know what I'm saying? Hey, Paula, got to go. Thank you. I'm so glad to hear from you. Take care, okay?
Have a great weekend, Mike.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. We'll be right back.
Uh-oh, he just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, here he is. It is 21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Roger is calling from Brooklyn, listening via the Internet. Hey, Roger.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Okay.
Good.
Nice to see you still on the air, of course. The show sounds better and better every day.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that.
I like to get right back into it and just bring it to back to a raw point, which I think is racism.
Okay.
And I just think that so many of these Republicans are just living in so much fear, and so much of what they do is out of this fear. And it's been this way not just for the past 8 years with Bush. He's just so representative of the, the kind of stupidity and, I guess, lack of advancement in intellectuality or spirituality.
Right, right.
Everything good that, you know, we good progressives are for. So, you know, I think, you know, I also I have to say on your, in terms of you, I told Kathy I would challenge you a little bit. I mean, I really don't think you're a very racist person. I think you know better. You know, but I think what you're also saying is that we have these things like embedded in us, like from an early age, depending upon who our parents are, what kind of house we're brought up in, what kind of community we're brought up in.
Right.
You know, and what we're how we're conditioned and sometimes brainwashed, unfortunately. But, you know, I just have to say is that I grew up in Brooklyn. And thanks to my mother, I grew up in a very diversified way, you know, having everyone from African people to Japanese people to, you know, Mexican people just hanging out in my house because my mother was in the music business. So there were a lot of musicians hanging out. And, you know, when you're sitting in a room with people and things are comfortable and you're sharing, it's a beautiful thing.
You know, is
people
it,
have to know.
You know, you bring up something deliberately, inadvertently, whatever, but isn't it funny how always and forever in this country, musicians, at least within, you know, the past century or so, musicians don't have any problem with this. You know, you get a bunch of guys or girls together who are making music, and they really kind of don't care, you know, who's playing what. I'm talking mostly about rock or jazz or fusion music. You know, people don't sit there and say, well, you can't sit in because you're fill in the blank, or you can't sit in because you're fill in the blank. It's always, musicians. I can remember
it's
even.
It's communal. It's like about sharing. You know?
Well, it is. It's also about creativity.
Exactly.
And I can remember as a kid, you know, back in the day, you never saw black people on television, certainly not in commercials. The only black person I saw on television as a kid growing up was Beulah. And Beulah was a maid. You know, this is before Hazel. That's the only black person I ever saw on television. And never, ever, ever, ever did you see a black person in a television commercial. And the only time I saw black people on TV is when there would be some jazz trio or a quartet or whatever, and all of a sudden, whoa, look, black people, they do exist.
Oh my God.
It was incredible. So yeah, I hear what you're saying.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we can get together and outlive each other in a good way and, get to the point where we're just so mixed at that point. It's not going to matter anymore.
Well, that's
a long way away.
That is a long way away, but that would be the ideal. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thank you.
I mean, Roger. Roger, I'm sorry. I appreciate you checking in, Roger. Thank you. Thank you. Steve, come on, man. Steve is right here. Hey,
hello?
Steve. This is Steve the banker. Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
I haven't heard from you for a while. I've got a couple of your emails, but, you know, a couple of them had kind of a frantic tone.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, there are times where it's frantic.
I don't know how anybody can be not frantic in these times. Honest to God, I don't.
There are always days like that are incredibly bad.
Yeah.
A few days, every day is bad. I mean, we've reached levels that, you know, when I think I first started calling you about a year ago, whenever it was, I mean, it was incredibly bad then. And
it's gotten worse.
It's 100 times worse now.
Right. And just for the audience's sake, you're talking about the financial world and the financial meltdown.
Oh, yeah. The small businesses of our country that, you know, just happen to make up about 80% of our infrastructure of everything.
Right.
Exactly. Of workers, of families, of everything.
Hey, Steve.
I'm watching it just fall apart.
Steve, hold on. Let me put you on hold. We'll come back and chat right after the break, because we've got to do a break here. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
Yeah, okay. 26 before the hour. We're talking with Steve here, our banker dude, who's listening via the internet from Massachusetts. Let me just drop this in. Reg just wrote in. And maybe you can answer this. She writes, why is no one asking who regulates the Fed? Because, you know, we had a caller mention that. The phonies who are screaming about deregulation and oversight and whatever other term is being bandied about as a cure for this tragedy continue to kneel before the one entity that is at the top of the pyramid scheme known as fractional reserve banking.
Right.
While the bankers who formed the Fed received congressional permission to go into business, they are independent of any accountability or oversight from anyone but their own shareholders. They lend the U.S. government the money they print themselves at whatever interest rate they determine acceptable. Nice work if you can get it. But why is no one demanding the same sort of transparency and regulation from the Fed that they now want to restore to other financial institutions?
Yeah, I do have an answer to that.
Good.
I've been talking about it endlessly for a week. All people have to do is, now that there's an internet, you know, just go to the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. It's a very easy document to read. You know, if you can read Green Eggs and Ham, you can read that.
Right.
And it's very easy because it basically says right in the document that the executive branch and Congress have some, you know, some oversight. Basically, once they're appointed, you know, it's like the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a trump card. And it is public opinion.
Uh-huh.
That is the trump card. And watching people get so upset. Now, yeah, I'm a little upset too over the billion, you know, the $150 million that the AIG guys got. But it's so out of proportion. I mean, $150 million. I mean, to tell you the truth, it is. It's a joke off a joke. To be that upset about that amount of money while the big ball of wax is $1 trillion in Asia every year and men are dying and women are dying.
Right.
That's the big ball of wax. You know, the big ball of wax is watching our jobs continually, you know, fly away.
Mm-hmm.
Trillions being stolen every day and trillions in the Federal Reserve. I mean, that person is right. Where's the transparency? And from my very first phone call, actually, to you, was I was screaming, you know, I was screaming, it's unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
what they're doing.
Right.
Because now you have a non-elected body making decisions on our tax money. It is a non-elected board. This can all change because the Trump card is all of that anger that is going to AIG should be focused on the big picture. And believe me, unless they want to be tarred and feathered physically after the American public really gets angry and really focuses in where it needs to be focused, which is that Federal Reserve, that, you know what? Believe me, they'll be moving to Greenland to save their own backside.
So it's time to stop this this entity, Federal Reserve, dismantle it, burn
of
it
course.
Up, throw it away.
Yeah, of course.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you know, bank it.
You know, I've had so many people over the course of my radio history, going back 5, 10, 15, 20 years, saying that to me. I used to, you know, just kind of write them off like, oh, Jesus, what's this, another Bilderberger group nut sending me an email or a phone call.
Right.
And I never paid any attention to it,
yeah.
Primarily because I didn't understand it. And
right.
I'll tell you, the honest to God truth, it's only been and I'm not ashamed to admit this, unlike most Americans, it's only been the past maybe 6 months that I've come to understand exactly what the Federal Reserve is and how it works.
Exactly.
And now, this makes perfect sense.
Right.
It ought to be thrown away.
Right. And like an insurance company, why do you really need them? You don't really need them. You need a good doctor and you need a hospital bed, like it's always been.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't need the middleman, and they are the middleman.
All right, let me toss something else at you here. This comes from Art. Regarding those Wall Street slugs, Art writes, who set this thing up, Slate
right.
Magazine on Tuesday ran a column by Elliot Spitzer. Here's the key line.
Right.
The appearance that this was all an inside job is overwhelming. AIG was nothing more than a conduit for huge capital flows to the same old suspects with no reason or explanation. That's Elliot Spitzer. Now, as you know, he's going to be on CNN this Sunday with Fareed Zakaria.
Right.
So you talk about must-see television. I want to see, because Spitzer was ready to lower the boom on these people until all of a sudden his inability to keep his pants zipped. And you know, the right people, so to speak, always know about this. And at the right moment,
right.
they spring it out into the public so that
right.
you, the big whistleblower, have to hang your head in shame and run for cover.
Let's hope that he doesn't, you know, go to whatever studio he has to go to by helicopter and that he has a couple of guys with him.
I hear you. God.
I'm saying, because you know what? You're right. He is the person to listen to. He is right.
Every time you call in, I ask you this. Let me ask you again. Are we going to be okay?
Well, it comes down to this. Now it becomes a little bit more political. And I just had that conversation with my 88-year-old aunt,
mm-hmm.
who's living in Florida right now,
mm-hmm.
Who came from nothing and saved, never made more than $40,000 and ended up with a couple $1 million.
Wow.
Okay. They lived right. I wish I could do that. But the answer to your question real quick.
Have they been hurt bad by all this?
They were hurt some. Man, she's brilliant. They got themselves out, and with a little bit of my prodding about 2 years ago, they got themselves out. They were only in municipals. They are going to be hurt with the GM stock, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my
but
God,
other
yeah.
than that, they're okay.
Yeah, good. Okay.
But the answer to your question, because it's important, are we going to get out of this? We're at a fork in the road in a political sense. It really depends on whether the Democratic Party, of which I'm just a rank and file person of, but whether the leadership has the 1940s and the 1960s backbone of the Democratic Party, the FDR backbone, to do the big things, not the little things. The big thing, even with all the hatred thrown at you, you know, Franklin Roosevelt had one heck of a lot of people in our country throwing hatred at him.
Right.
And in the meantime, he saved from fascism from both sides of the ocean,
mm-hmm.
and he, you know, saved my father's generation and mine and yours. And we're still living, believe it or not, really, in an FDR world.
Oh, absolutely. And right, and the right-wingers hate it. But now, when you talk about finding the backbone, are you talking about Obama or the Democratic Party? Because if you're...
entire Democratic Party since late 1970s, after Watergate, something happened. After Sam Ervin left the stage, something happened to my party,
right.
to our party. I don't know what it is. But since that day, they have not been able to do the big thing. The big thing here is, the definition of big thing,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what he's talking about 13, 16 months, 25 months. I don't know.
Right.
He's got to get those guys out of Asia tomorrow.
Yeah.
For the money, for saving lives, and for moving this country forward.
Well, let me just throw this in. Steve, you know, I'm a rank-and-file Democrat, too.
Right.
And, excuse me, you and I both know the shape our party's in too. It is not it's not morally corrupt, but it certainly is ethically challenged. You know, the Republican Party is just a bunch of limbots. But I got two words for anybody who says the Democrats have got to develop the Democratic Party has got to develop spine and do this. Two words: Christopher Dodd. You understand what I'm saying? I mean,
of course, man.
Right. So if that's the Democratic Party, and as far as his tenure in the Senate, this is the Democrat. This is a guy who voted for the family. I think he sponsored Family Leave Act. All this stuff.
Oh, 99% of Christopher Dodd is a wonderful man.
Right. Is so good. And then this thing comes up, you know, according to reports I've read, granted it's in the New York Times, I don't know if I can trust it, 100,000, 200,000 that he's gotten money from AIG over the course of his senatorial career.
Right.
And then whatever the truth is, and I don't know what the truth is at this point,
but
he inserts that clause
right.
that says the bonuses are exempt. What the hell is that about?
You know what that's about? I got an answer. Unfortunately, I haven't an answer for you because it's a pathetic system that we have. The answer is Bill Towson.
Yes, what, who, Paulson?
Bill Towson, Congressman in Louisiana, and that makes that $200,000 look like peanuts because he got $2 million. He's the Republican congressman who pushed through that donut health care system.
Okay.
The system is, Mike, and for everybody who's listening, look, I don't agree with what Dodd did, but you know what? It's politics, and sometimes you got to give and take, and either you're on the good side of that or you're on the bad side of it. And most of the time, the Republicans, like Bill Towson, he got $2 million, and then he screwed all of us with a health care system that stinks.
Yeah.
And then he walked away and became a lobbyist and then an executive. So they all give it.
Hey, listen, Steve, I'm flat out of time. I got to leave it there.
I love you, man. Always
glad to hear from you. Thank you. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
You better thank God for that.
It's about 9:30 before the hour. Boy, time just flies by when you're having fun, doesn't it? Thanks to our engineer and producer, Kathy Bay, with always special assistance from Ian Huff. Ben Birch is our technical advisor. Military affairs correspondent for this program is Sharon Gordy. Bruce Enberg, Prairie 2, is our economic correspondent. And the ethical advisors of the show are Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. That's the crew.
All right. I was going to have an Uncle Mike Story Corner tonight. I've got a really interesting piece from Mambo, and I'm going to have to do it Monday because I'm sorry, Mambo. I wrote to Mambo and said we're going to do it tonight and just didn't get around to it. So we'll do it Monday. All right. Meantime, back to your phone calls here. Martin is calling from driving in Ohio, listening on Sirius, right, Martin?
Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good.
Can you hear me okay?
It's been a while since I chatted with you.
Uh-huh.
But couple of things. First of all, just looking at, you know, so many of the problems that we have in society today, I think it's fair to say there's a phrase that I remember growing up, which was you can't get enough of what you don't really want.
Now, wait a minute. Say that again.
You can't get enough of what you don't really want.
Oh, okay. I got you.
You know, in other words, people are just crazy today to acquire and accumulate so much, and there's never an end because there's always something new, something faster, something bigger. And people are just nuts today. And certainly in, you know, the leaders of our society, political and religious and, you know, and economic, they seem more driven than the average bear, you know, to somehow try to keep up with their self-centered greed.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly agree with you. You know, you often come out and just express how many people in the name of religion, they kind of want to give their greed some kind of sacred veneer that
right.
entitles them to basically screw everybody else, to kill, rape, and steal
right.
because they're in the wrong religion. They're the bad guys.
Sure.
So having said all that, I also wanted to say to you, it seems to me, but one of the things, the main things you're trying to do is to encourage people to kind of recognize their bigotry and become more open-minded, you know, for a better planet. And in order to do that, you know, especially if you're going to promote that, I think that it's incumbent upon you to see those areas where you might also be closed-minded. And by listening to you, you know, and I agree with you so much politically, there's one area I really strongly disagree, and that is that although in the name of religion every crime to humanity is being committed, behind all that there's this amazing group of human beings who walk their talk who don't really belong to a particular religion, although religion is trying to own them and use them. You could look at the Sufi mystics like Mirdad and Rumi. You could look at so-called Christian mystics like Francis of Assisi, so many Indian mystics. And these are people that were not greedy, that were not really interested in material goals, and their whole life was speaking an example of love for all other living beings.
All right, now wait. Are you saying that I am indicting these people along with my contempt for religion?
I'm saying that what I've heard, any mention of religion or God is always within the context of, you know, it's all bogus.
Oh, yeah. Well, I will stand by that until I suck in my last breath. But let's not confuse religion with spirituality, which I think you're doing. Or accusing me of doing that. I have repeatedly, and maybe not on nights you were listening, repeatedly made a clear distinction between spirituality and religion. I don't think a Sufi mystic, who whirls himself into some sort of spiritual ecstasy is someone who is willing to pay tribute to some hierarchy in a church because the top rung of the church says, if you don't, I am the voice of God, and if you disrespect me, you'll be tossed into a dark pit for all eternity. So please don't accuse me even remotely so, of confusing religion with spirituality. Fair enough?
Well, I think that's wonderful. That's what we agree about.
Okay. Listen, Martin, I hate to cut you off, pal, but I've got to leave it there. We are almost out of time, and I do appreciate what you had to say. But no, to me, religion is one of the most negative forces on earth. It was created by mankind, humankind, I should say. That's how it was created. It's a construct that had its origins in absolute terror. That's where it came from. One does not need some sort of religious structure to be a decent, good, loving human being. To the contrary, religion destroys that. So, no, I don't mind being lectured by someone who disagrees with me, but let's not confuse religion with spirituality. Okay? Okay. Listen, thanks for hanging out this week. I do appreciate it very much. We are on our way here with the Molloy Radio program. I'll see you Monday. Take care. Have a great weekend. Keep it lit, okay? And, oh, yeah, by the way, have a great weekend, Kevin, Kenny, wherever you are.